Welcome back to 32 Fans. I'm Alex Chester. With me is Akiva Wieniger. Akiva, how are you today?
No more 32 days. This is like 300 days at this point.
Yeah, we had to re-record the opening because I accidentally said welcome back to 32 Fans in 32 days, and it's no longer our full name. We're just 32 Fans, baby. And today we are talking about the Oscars. Is that correct, Akiva, according to your schedule?
Yeah.
You're sort of running, you're running the topics here.
Yeah, you do everything else, but I tell you what you're allowed to talk about.
Yeah. All right. So 2 weeks ago when you said that you wanted to do this podcast, I had admitted to you that I basically hadn't seen any movies this year at all. And I've like powered through. In the last 2 weeks, I've seen like over a dozen movies. In the last 10 hours, I've seen two movies. And one of them, The Hateful Eight, was like a real slog. So that was a long, long movie. Like over 3.5 hours, because I saw like the special widescreen release, not the general release.
No, you're boring me already.
Yeah.
What does that mean? The special?
I don't know.
Longer, if you see the widescreen release,
go read on Wikipedia the version. So Quentin Tarantino would only allow it to be shown at certain theaters that had the right like 70 millimeter cameras that he wanted, and so it was only in certain cities like New York, LA, Chicago, at certain theaters. So the version that was released in other theaters was about 20 minutes shorter, and that was the general release. So the one that I saw was the longer release.
So it was an extra 20 minutes, much like your explanation just now for the movie.
Exactly. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. It's funny because people often make fun of me for probably reasons similar to the reasons that people make fun of you when I send my various charts. They're like, how do you have time for all of this stuff that you do? Such as when I rate all my TV shows for the year, and there's like 40 TV shows that I watch every year, and people are like, right. How is there
time
for
that? And it's easy.
That?
You just ignore your family and your job.
Yeah, correct and correct. And also, but the one thing I say is, well, I don't see any movies. So I see a bunch of TV shows, but I don't see movies unless Akiva forces me to for the purpose of a podcast. And I think the reason is because, and I discovered this watching all these movies, and I watched all like the Oscar bait movies, so I saw good movies the last couple weeks, but the best movie is worse than any decent TV show. And I just think it's because, how do you tell the story in 1.5 or 2 or even 3 hours? How do you develop characters, you know, the way that you can over 10 or 20 or 30 or more hours on TV? And the answer is you can't. So like, and we'll get to the sort of the details when we talk about some of these movies, but basically all the characters in all of these movies are like, black or white. They're either purely good or purely bad. There's very little nuance. There's not time, you know, sort of the
There's
flawed
not a lot of
anti-hero.
Anti-heroes, you're saying.
Exactly. Sort of the stereotypical character behind, you know, sort of all the top TV shows, Sopranos and Mad Men, et cetera, et cetera. There's no time for that. So it's just, you know, all right, here's the good guy in the movie. Here's the bad guy. You know, maybe we'll throw one twist in there. But it's that's sort of my one big issue. And also, and let me ask you this, Akiva, because you're much more of a movie buff than I am. What's your take on 2015 in movies in general? Was it a good year, a bad year, average?
It was an above average year for sure.
Oh, wow. Okay.
It was definitely above average year. It wasn't, there isn't one all-time movie, but there's probably more A-minus movies than in a long time.
Okay. So interesting you say that.
Might not be as deep. Actually, there are years where there are probably more like very, like pretty good movies, but in terms of very good and above, this is a pretty, it's not the best year, but that would have to be a whole nother podcast where I would rank. But I mean, because I was looking at, I make top 10 lists every year. If anybody wants them, tweet at me, I'll send them to you. But like top 10 movies of the year, I think every year you have it, like since 1993 or something, 94. And I did notice there was one year where my number one, and it's a bad anecdote because I don't remember it off the top of my head, would not have made my top 10 another year. So it was like the worst movie year ever. I think it was like 2011 or 2012 or something. Anyway. And like Wolf of Wall Street was number one for me a couple years ago, and like that most years wouldn't be like 8 or 9 even.
So my guess would be that 2011 was the year, because I was looking through the nominees for Best Picture for the last 10, 15 years. And my argument was that this year is the worst year, at least in the last 10 years, other than 2011. Because there were no great movies this year, as you said. And even like the you know, like I couldn't even come up with a top 10 for this year. I came up with a top 5. And even with those 5, I have issues with all of them. So I would argue this is a weak year, but go ahead.
Oh, yeah. It was 2011. My top 10.
Oh, so
20...
good. So we agree that was a weak year.
Yeah. My number one movie that year was an Iranian movie, A Separation, which was really good.
Yep. I didn't see it, but I heard it was good.
And after that, there was a lot of indie. I see a lot of indie movies here and a lot of foreign movies. Like, Footnote, which was an Israeli movie that's actually really good.
Yeah, that was really good. I saw it.
Trust, that wouldn't be on like that. David Schwimmer directed that, just to give you an idea. But it was actually interesting. Margin Call, which is a little bit like I think it's basically the fall of, what's the first bank that fell?
Bear Stearns.
Bear Stearns. It was like a fake version of that. We need to talk about Kevin. Yeah, that was a really weak year. Young Adult is in my top 10. Yeah, that could be the worst year ever.
Yeah, Young Adult was okay.
Yeah, because like the next year, there's movies like Django Unchained is 9 and The Impossible, yeah, which I really liked, is 10. And so, yeah, there's...
I would have Django higher that year, but yeah.
Anyway.
And then the movie that I just saw in the last couple of hours was The Hateful Eight, actually. So I really have Tarantino on the mind.
Okay. All right, fine. So I think what we'll do is, do you have a top 10? Because I have a top 10.
Well, I have a top 5.
I'll give you my top 10. You'll do the top 5.
Sure.
And then after that, can we predict the Oscars? Neither of us know anything, but can we make that the bet this week?
Sure. I'm going to have to look up the odds, and I'm just going to...
No, don't look up the odds. That's cheating. We're both guessing just on guessing.
Oh, wait, we're not allowed to look up the odds at all?
No, because otherwise we just pick whatever the favorite is for every movie. That would
but for a couple of the categories, there's like 1 to 50, like everybody says for sure so-and-so is winning.
Yeah,
and
I haven't looked, so if you don't look, then we're both not cheating.
Well, I haven't seen the odds, but I've heard like in a couple categories that there's like an
obvious
winner.
Okay, so obviously like Leonardo DiCaprio is probably going to win Best Actor. That,
yeah.
You know, if you, whatever you, information you have till now, you're going with.
Okay, fine, whatever. All right, Akiva, so why don't we start with you giving me your top 10 movies of the year?
Okay. Well, I'll do, once we go down to 5, I guess we could trade off, but in the meantime, I will go first. And this isn't my official list for the two people, the one person, me, who cares about my official list, because there's the movies I have not yet seen, Steve Jobs, Creed, The Age of Adeline. I figure that's like a good movie to watch with my wife. I don't know if that'll be good or not. Call Me Lucky, which is a documentary, I think by Bobcat Goldthwait. Bridge of Spies, the only one of the 8 Oscar best film nominees I haven't seen. Anomalisa, which is a Charlie Kaufman movie. And I'm in the middle of one other movie. But I think for the most part, I've seen all the relevant movies. So
we haven't seen half of my top 5. So.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay. So, but these, you know, probably at least one of those movies will crack the top 10 when I get in there, but not yet. So anyway, number 10 is a really weird documentary called The Wolf Pack. It could be like number 2 if I thought it was true, but I have this feeling that if the movie was a little bit bigger, there would have been a lot of reporting on how bogus it may have been, but it was such like a small documentary. It's about you haven't heard of it, right? It's nope. About a family on the Lower East Side where they're like the family's really eccentric and the father didn't let the kids leave the house, and like they don't leave the house until, you know, for years on end, like even to go to the doctor, they never leave their house. And only the father leaves to like get them food. And they basically...
It's kind of like Room, except less rape.
I mean, they don't show the rape for sure. But it's a documentary. And their thing is they act out movies, like full movies. They make movies like pretending to be that whole movie because they're so bored. But it just seems to me like...
What's the explanation for why they're not allowed to leave the house?
The father's just crazy. And like by the end of the movie, they start going out more. But they had already started going out by the time, I guess, they met the director, because she saw them on the street and says she was intrigued. But to be honest, I don't totally believe it, but it's still an interesting and worthwhile movie. So that's my number 10.
All right.
Number 9 is Sicario. Which is pretty good. The ending is the beginning is the
but
best
what
part.
About what about the end though? The last 2 minutes is unbelievable.
Well, I don't know. All right, so to be honest, that's the movie I'm in the middle of, but I really like it. I didn't finish it in time for this podcast, but
I haven't seen it. Okay. My comment was just to out you as not having finished.
Yeah,
it.
That was the one I haven't seen, but it could fall off. But as of the second, I really like it. Number 8 is The End of the Tour, the Jason Segel movie about David Foster Wallace. I really like David Foster Wallace. My like primary English professor in college was obsessed with him. So we had to read, you know, Infinite Jest and like everything he ever wrote. So I guess I'm a pretty big David Foster Wallace fan. Not as big as you. Are you familiar with Infinite Jest? You ever read it?
No, I read his essay on the cruise.
Yeah. Wrote Roger Federer is a famous one,
which is really funny. And you know, obviously I know This Is Water, but I've never read any of his novels.
Yeah, Infinite Jest is like one of the more sort of acclaimed books of the last 30 years, but it's over 1,000 pages. Well, I'm just telling the listeners.
Yeah. Yeah.
And actually, Ken Tremendous, Michael Shore, who created Parks and Recreation and Brooklyn Nine-Nine and was Moe's on The Office and is a huge baseball fan. He's such a big David Foster Wallace fan that he actually owns the film rights to Infinite Jest, even though it's pretty much impossible to make. John Krasinski, Jim from The Office, made a movie about like some other incomprehensible David Foster Wallace book that I'm blanking on which one it was, or story the second, and it was Brief Interviews with Hideous Men, and the movie was garbage. He's actually in a lot of bad movies, John Krasinski, fun fact.
Yeah.
Anyway, okay, so that was pretty good. Number seven, Southpaw, which was a movie I knew nothing about other than it was boxing related coming in, so I didn't realize that the main thing in the whole movie, which happens very early, was spoiled for most people, but not for me. If you haven't seen it, that's worthwhile.
Which is what? The Jake Gyllenhaal's left-handed?
Yeah, it's he's a left-handed. You think he's a righty, and then he gets you with his left hand. Yeah. And number six, a movie I know you just saw, Hateful Eight, which isn't my favorite Quentin Tarantino movie, but it's definitely an eminently watchable film.
Yeah, it's very slow moving, but that is, you know, a lot of Tarantino movies.
Sure, but there's some very compelling scenes, some really interesting stuff.
Yeah, the only recommendation I would make is don't watch that at 3 a.m. because if you're very tired, it's tough to watch. And that was the scenario under which I watched it.
Sure. And okay, so what's your number five? And then I'll do my number five.
Well, I don't really have mine in order. I just have a top five.
Oh, look,
I'm like all those newspaper guys who say these are the top two movies of the order.
I think only the New York Times does that, to be honest.
No, a lot do. And the way I know is because every time I watch a movie, I read the Wikipedia page from start to finish. And so included on that is all the lists on which it's a top 10 movie of the year. And they all say number one, number one, number one, number two, number two, number two. And then at the end of the list, it's, you know, top 10 alphabetical. And so there's quite a few that do it, not just the New York Times.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm one of them just because I couldn't come up with an order for my top five. But Hateful Eight is one of my top five.
Okay. All right. So my number five will be Spotlight. Very good movie. To me, the reason why it's not number one on my list, where it is on a lot of people, is you don't get to know the characters nearly as well as you should, which goes back to what you're saying that TV is better than movies. Your philosophy, because if this was like a 10-part show, you'd know the characters really well. They could have been the exact same. Like, this could have been the best HBO ever if it was like a 10-part, like, one-year show.
Yeah. Oh, and it could be even more than that. But my biggest issue with this movie was I thought Mark Ruffalo was by far the worst member of the cast, by far. Mm-hmm. And yet he's the one, I think Rachel McAdams was as well, but he's nominated for an Oscar, which to me is crazy.
Yeah.
To be honest, I'm a little biased against Mark Ruffalo anyways, because I don't really like him. I find him to be sort of one of these annoying, over-earnest Hollywood actors who annoy me.
Yeah. No, I don't like him either.
But in the movie, first of all, he has this weird squinting thing he does. Mm-hmm. He couldn't even bother to pretend to have a Boston accent, although they do make light of that at one point. They say, wait, you're from Southie? Why don't you have an accent? And then he just shrugs and says, I don't know. But everything that annoys me about him in real life annoys me about him in the movie. He's like over earnest. Mm-hmm. He's like, you know, to me, by far, like the cast was very strong overall, I thought, right?
Yeah, very strong.
I mean, so why was Ruffalo the one who was nominated?
He's the most famous. I don't know.
Well, no, he's not the most
famous.
Like,
he's the most
Michael
Keaton. Yeah, but Keaton is insane.
I thought Michael Keaton should have been nominated, if anybody. Look, to be nominated as an actor, it has to be that you add value that I couldn't see someone else taking the role easily.
Yeah, yeah.
That you really did something transformative.
Sure.
You know, like any movie that Daniel Day-Lewis is in, it's unique because it's Daniel Day-Lewis, right? And there was nothing, you know, I thought Liev Schreiber was really good in the movie. When he first comes on the scene for the first time, I'm like, boy, that looks just like Liev Schreiber, but it's not him, right?
Sure.
Which I guess is a credit to him. You know, the whole cast, everybody was really strong.
Yeah, no, I agree like with Schreiber. Like, Leonardo DiCaprio could have done that role easily. All the greats, like DiCaprio, Hanks,
yeah.
Dinklage.
Well, I don't think you need to be
Biggs,
a great actor.
Anyone could have done it.
Yeah. The Rock. You said The Rock is the biggest movie star in the world.
Yeah, but where's The Rock's Oscar?
Yeah, could he have been
he could win. The Rock's going to be the first guy who's going to win
Marty Baron.
He could win an EGOTS, which is the Emmy, Grammy, Oscar, Tony, and the Slammy Award for WWE.
yeah. All right. Okay. Yeah. So, what's next on your list?
By the way, you know, like, have you seen Hamilton yet?
Yeah.
Oh, you have.
So I'm going to be like.
Hold on. Is this going to be a scorching hot take?
No, it's a freezing cold take. Okay. It's the Hamilton's the best thing ever, okay. And everybody should see it. But no, this is just sort of I'm lucky. I happened to read about Hamilton like a year and a half ago, so I bought tickets to the previews way before like anybody knew about it, and I bought a ticket for me and my wife, obviously, because that's who I'm going to go to a Broadway show with. And she was really annoyed with me when I bought it because she's like, why would I have any interest in some stupid show? This looks like a really stupid show for nerds like you who like Alexander Hamilton. Right. And I bought it in the middle of a week when she had no work and when she had planned to want to go to Florida. And I ruined that because I have these tickets, which I bought for like $45 each.
Yeah, couldn't you have just brought someone else?
Well, but I said to her, I'm like, trust me, Jen, you know, I know.
Yeah, but she's not going to go to Florida to her family for a week because...
Well, fast forward to she was literally crying during the show, and she memorized the entire show by listening to it nonstop on Spotify for the following like month after, okay. And it's the best show she's ever seen, and she's obsessed with it, uh-huh. And she wants to go again and again. Except now tickets are like over $500 a pop, yeah. if you can even find them.
Yeah, I searched the other day just out of curiosity, and there was one like there were tickets available. They were like $600, and it was in November.
Yeah, so I mean, I would go again. It's just that you know, yeah. It's
so here's my question. If you're Hamilton, at some point this year or next year, wouldn't it be worth it to just film like a very basic movie with all these actors now and everyone's still there and just literally print money around the country?
Yeah, well, so, but here's the thing with Hamilton, and it's sort of, you know, it's sort of the thing with like the monoculture in general. When we say that, you know, Lin-Manuel Miranda is insanely popular and Hamilton isn't insanely popular, but within a small subset, it's insanely popular the way that like, you know, like Mad Men or Breaking Bad.
Sure.
There's still only a million people in the country.
No,
they
print money. It's just that it would print money internationally. It's just so big. I hear what you're saying, but I think Hamilton transcended that.
But to be so big by for a Broadway show is very different than being so big for like a mass movie.
I agree, yeah. But I think it was going to lead the Grammy Awards before Taylor Swift probably said, "I'm not doing it unless you let me lead the Grammy Awards." So they got bumped. But I think. I think it would. There's no downside, you know. It would be cheap to produce other than paying the actors. And
I know that you listen to Comedy Bang Bang. So did you like the episode? I think it was last week or maybe the week before with Ben Schwartz, where they played Lin-Manuel's freestyle rap that he left on Ben Schwartz's voicemail like 5 minutes after.
Yeah,
midnight.
It's funny. Yeah. Scott Aukerman, I think he told the story during that episode. Is like. Lin-Manuel Miranda, who wrote Hamilton, is a huge fan of Comedy Bang Bang, and especially the episodes where it's just Scott Aukerman and Ben Schwartz, John Ralphio from Parks and Rec.
Yeah.
And like Scott Aukerman wanted to go. They were both in New York for work, and Ben Schwartz was going to Hamilton. He said, "You should come." And Aukerman isn't like Justin Bieber, who's just going to like call up and get two tickets from, you know, from the show, which literally impossible. Like Lin-Manuel Miranda at this point probably has like four tickets a night to give away. Like there's not, you know, there's
every single showing there's like massive celebrities in the
audience. Yeah. So
it's like, yeah, anybody who can get a ticket to that is going.
So, and probably like the people really like to go 10 times cause that, you know, they have the juice to just get in wherever they want. So, what's it called? So he like literally that day that he wanted to go, Lin-Manuel Miranda tweeted something about like, "Are you doing another episode with Ben Schwartz?" And he's like, "Yeah." I was like, "I never do this, but can I have two tickets to Hamilton, please?" And he got him because he was like a fan of Scott Aukerman. But they're hard to get. Anyway, my point is they should make it into a movie. What were you going to say?
But the funny part of that story is that Ben Schwartz and Scott Aukerman both got tickets independently of each other.
Yeah, that's not so
Aukerman
funny.
Shows up. No, because Aukerman said, like, Aukerman showed up at the theater and Ben Schwartz was sitting next to him. And he's like, "What? Like, I didn't know."
Oh, they sat next to each other?
That's what they said on the podcast.
That's not such a good story. I mean, anyway.
You never know the podcast what's true and what's
okay.
not.
Except this one. Everything is true. All right. Keep going. Number four.
Yeah.
Oh, you're supposed to go first.
Well, I've said two of mine. I said Spotlight is on my list and Hateful Eight is on my list.
Oh, okay, fine. Number four, I have Room. I read the book and I didn't even realize they were turning into a movie. I really like the book. I believe the movie goes further in the timeline. I haven't read the book in a while, but further in the timeline than the movie. It's really well done. Speaking of actors being nominated, did you see Room?
No.
Oh, right. You refuse to see Room.
On my list. The kid, no, I actually added it to my list.
The kid is incredible and it's shown from his point of view. So he's in 100% of the scenes in the movie.
So he should have been nominated?
Brie Larson or whatever her name is.
She was nominated also.
Yeah, she was nominated, but listen, this is how weird like the Hollywood stuff is. She was nominated for Best Actress, Even though she's not in, she's in enough of the movie to be nominated for Best Actress, but she's not in every scene. He was nominated for a Golden Globe. He didn't get nominated for an Oscar, but he was nominated for Best Supporting Actor, even though he's literally in every scene of the movie. Like, it's his vantage point, so it's impossible.
There's articles about this every year.
I know, but I don't know if there's ever been someone who's been in every scene of a movie. Like, it's told from his point of view, so it's there can't be a scene in the movie without him.
Yeah, but there is every single year there is a supporting actor.
Yeah, but it's usually like this guy was 31 minutes and this guy's 27. Like, this guy's in the movie for an hour 40.
Yeah,
at a certain point you can't be supporting actor anyway.
But it's like he's a kid. I think the logic is, he's a kid. He's not the main actor. He's being, he's a kid. You know, I think that's their attitude.
Yeah, but he happened to have been unbelievable. I was trying to I'm watching the movie trying to imagine my kid follow instructions and how much bribing they would have to do for that.
Yeah, it's not a twin. Don't they usually use twins for that reason?
Yeah, well, it was Mary Kate and Ashley's kids. That's what it was, I think.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, so you spoiled your number three before. You said
Bridge of Spies,
which is the only movie I haven't seen. Should I see that? Should I see Bridge of Spies? It is next on my list after I finish Sicario.
This is my question about Bridge of Spies. This is a movie.
Don't spoil it because I
starring seen it. Starring Tom Hanks.
Yeah.
Directed by Steven Spielberg.
Sure.
Written by Joel and Ethan Coen.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Huge dramatic scene at the end where everybody dies.
Oh my God. Yeah.
No.
I barely know what it's about other than a bridge and spies, but yeah.
Yeah. But I knew nothing before I started watching except for that also. But my question is, with all of those things, how did this movie go so under the radar? I had never heard of it basically until I looked at the list of movies that were nominated and I was like, oh, I got to see this. I don't understand how it went so under the radar.
I think the nerds are in charge now and the nerds aren't the biggest Spielberg guys. And maybe the movie was not that good. And that the fact that it was connected to Spielberg, Hanks and the Coens, prop it up from being a B to an A minus.
I don't
know. At this point, if he directs any movie, Munich isn't a great movie, but that gets a Best Picture nomination because it's Spielberg. At this point, just about any serious movie he does gets nominated for Best Picture.
Munich would be in my top three for this year, though. Munich is a movie with flaws, but it was better than almost any movie I saw this year.
Okay.
And that says a lot about how I think this is a weak year. So this is the thing about Bridge of Spies. I won't ruin it. Obviously, you haven't seen it yet. It's a really, really good, really strong period piece. It has... The characters aren't... Well, it's more nuanced than a lot of the movies this year. See, I'm trying really hard not to spoil it since you haven't seen it. But when you're watching it, you feel like you could mix it up for a bunch of other different movies. You know what I mean?
Yes.
If you saw a scene from it 20 years from now, spliced in with scenes from other movies, you wouldn't be able to even tell that they were different movies. So it's not particularly unique, but it's a very well-made, well-done. You know, again, it has superstars across the board.
Mm-hmm.
It has a deep cast. So it's in my top five in a weak year. But it's not. I don't think it's a particularly memorable movie.
Okay, my number three is The Martian. It's definitely a flawed movie in the sense that there's some absurd scenes, especially at the end. It's completely unrealistic. But it's funnier than any of the other movies we've talked about by a lot. It's interesting. The acting is pretty decent. Matt Damon is fantastic. And really, if it was 4 hours, I would have been fine. The whole thing, was really compelling. And that's really all you can ask for in a movie. It's 2.5 hours and there's not a boring second in the whole movie.
Yeah, look, the one issue I have with movies like The Martian is that the plot is so complicated that if you're not a scientific expert in that field where you can actually follow all the details, you're going to hurt your head trying to. And so what I sort of do is I just stop thinking and I'm like, I'm just going to enjoy this on a superficial level. And my wife is watching with me and she's like, wait a second, there's a rocket on the other side of the – where did that rocket come from? And I'm like, I don't know. Who cares? Let's just enjoy it.
Yeah,
and
I agree.
So I don't – I can't really get too bogged down in the details.
Yeah, but if we knew the science stuff, we'd probably hate the movie because I'm sure we'd
– Well, so that's the question. So how good – that's what I was going to say. I wonder, did Neil deGrasse Tyson type a bunch of angry tweets about this movie or –
Yeah,
so that's
know.
My question there. I don't know the answer to that.
All right, so what's your number two?
My next movie on the list is Creed, which you also said you haven't seen.
Yeah, I mean, I wasn't such a big fan of them. I thought they were always a Pearl Jam knockoff. I don't – it's crazy they made a documentary about Scott Stapp, but whatever you're going to do.
Yeah. So here's the thing. I had never, I grew up without a TV, basically. So I never really saw TV growing up.
Without a TV. Listen,
well,
to this bragger.
Before, haven't I? We had one TV in our basement without cable behind lock and key. So
is that why you watch so much TV now? You're making up for lost time.
Yeah. So
it's most people would go up and they'd be with all these women and do drugs. So, but that's what you were doing when you were 13 because you didn't have a television. So now you're switching.
Oh, yeah. Oh, sure. Yeah. Oh, in my house, women and drugs were totally permissible. Just no TV allowed.
No TV.
Yeah. My dad would say, like, did I catch you watching TV? Go upstairs and do some cocaine right now.
Yeah, exactly.
But
I mean, it's Minnesota. You're just doing it to keep warm.
Yeah, exactly. So when I actually, so I am my wife's senior year of college, I moved to Ann Arbor, where she went to college, to be with her. And I lived across the street in a tiny apartment. And so when she had spring break and I had a job, so when she had spring break, she went to like Mexico with her roommates, and I couldn't go because I actually had a job. So I'm sitting all by myself in March and rainy, freezing cold Ann Arbor, Michigan, with nothing to do. So I moved into her house because it was more spacious than mine. And she had a TV, which I didn't have. And she had cable, which I didn't have.
Wow, you still have no TV. It's in your year after college. You have no TV.
Yeah. So I had never seen any of the Rockies, and they were all on Comcast On Demand that week. So I like watched like all five in a row in her room, or four in a row at the time. And so that's when I saw all the Rockies. So I didn't like grow up with the Rockies. Were you a Rocky guy?
I liked them. They were always on WPIX. So I, you know, they were always on. So you like couldn't not see each one a couple times. But I was never a crazy Rocky fan. But I've seen them all, and I like them.
So the thing about the Rockies. Okay, so the other thing you have to know is like I'm a big wimp. Like I cry in every movie. So I was bawling for like the whole last scene in Creed. Even though like you know exactly what's going to happen. There's zero twists in this plot of Creed. You know, I will say this. The biggest plot twist in the movie, the most unrealistic thing in the movie, is the fact, and you haven't seen it yet, right?
That Michael B. Jordan is like 5'6" in real life?
No, I'm going to ruin this for you. But there's a scene in the movie where Michael B. Jordan's mom, which is Creed's ex-wife, Apollo Creed's ex-wife, who like hates boxing because of what it did to her husband and hates sports, she happens to be sitting in her house watching PTI in the middle of the day. And that's how she finds it. Yeah.
So she hates sports, maybe she loves Wilbon and Kornheiser.
I guess so, yeah. Because like they show like – and also it's one of those things. It's like a stupid plot device in a movie where every TV they show in America is showing the same thing.
Yeah.
And it's PTI. Because PTI's rating, they have like 30 million people watching it every
like
day.
Yeah, Walking Dead times too. If she was watching, you know, First Take, I could understand why she hated sports. Anyway, my number two is a movie I don't even know if you've seen.
Oh, wait, hold on. So I was just going to say about Creed. So it's
oh,
well
yeah, that
done.
Was really
it's
interesting. Keep going.
It's exactly what you think it's going to be. All right, shut up. Okay, fine. Move on.
Number two for me is Brooklyn. I loved it. I thought it was going to be really boring and I would shut it off in the middle. But it was a great movie. You really cared about the characters. You really got to know the main character. Well, they did a great job of sort of explaining this like journey that everyone's grandparents or great great grandparents have taken of like going to the new country and back in the day. And the main actor,
but it isn't that far back in the day. It's 1952, not 1912. Which is what you would sort of assume.
Fair enough. But they, you know, they
no, that's
didn't
not a
make
criticism.
It...
That's just it's an interesting wrinkle that they did it in 1952 as opposed to 1912.
Yeah, but it's then like you could understand the language while you know and still being realistic, and the clothing isn't absurd, and like people aren't pooping in buckets then, so it's it's worth doing.
My favorite part of the movie is the fact that the guy who played Bugsy Siegel in Boardwalk Empire, which is one of my favorite TV shows of all time, he plays one of Tony's brothers in the movie. Did you notice that?
No, I didn't.
Here's my issue with Brooklyn. Every single character, black and white. Mrs. Kelly is like pure evil, like she's worse than Adolf Hitler. Tony is like pure good, like he's better than like Jesus. I mean, Tony is like flawless, you know?
Right.
Like, I mean, we're going to spoil this movie, right? Because we've both seen it.
Sure.
How pissed off should Tony should be when she comes back, she ignored him. She didn't write him a letter for 6 weeks. She fooled around and almost got engaged to some other guy, you know? But he's like such a pure heart of gold. Doesn't care in the slightest. And meanwhile, that Miss Kelly is like so comically evil. She's like, I'm going to ruin your life for no reason whatsoever.
For no reason. But no. Listen, that was what Yentas did back in the day. They ruined people's lives for no reason.
Yeah. And today as well.
And what's your number one?
Okay. So, and again, it's not my number one, but we'll say it's in alphabetical order, which would make this the top list because it's a number. 99 Homes.
Oh, no. We have the same number one.
Really?
And it's such an off the beat number one. That's insane. Yeah, keep going.
Yeah, so here's my question about 99 Homes. So I was trying to convince our mutual friend Amir, who's a prolific email writer for those who listen to the Seinfeld podcast. Amir tracks every single movie he ever watches and then sends an email at the end of the year saying, here's all the 70 movies I watched from 2015 rated from 1 to 75.
Yeah.
And 99 Homes wasn't even on the list.
Yeah, so
I
emailed it to him to watch it also. Did he watch it?
Well, he said he hadn't watched it yet. And he's like, I don't understand why... And I said to him, I said, I don't understand why it went under the radar. And he said to me, well, it must not be very good. And I said, well, look, it has like a 92% on Rotten Tomatoes.
What a hater.
So the critics who saw it like it. It's just that it didn't get attention for whatever
reason. I think it got swallowed up by The Big Short, which is a far inferior movie.
Yeah. So for people who don't know what Nine at Homes is, you know that one scene in The Big Short where Steve Carell goes down to Florida to sort of check it out and see what the subprime mortgage situation is there? So this is an entire movie based on that one scene, except instead of being sort of a silly farce, it's very deeply emotional and traumatic. It's definitely a movie that you will need your tissues for. Very powerful. Michael Shannon is always great in everything he does. When you see Andrew Garfield, the first scene in the movie,
he's Jewish.
You're like, yeah, he's racer. The Jewiest Jew in the world, which is my issue because you
should meet
playing,
my wife's uncle. There's some really Jewy Jews out there.
You see him playing a redneck, and to me, it was so like comically like unbelievable. I'm like, well, this is a very terrible casting because Andrew Garfield is like a elitist Jew. How is he going to play like a lower middle class, you know, Florida redneck? Uh-huh. But he actually does a good job as well. The kid does a great job. You know,
his name used to be Garfinkel, so I'll give you that.
Yeah. Well, yeah. So it's a really well done movie. I thought I would say this, but you're gonna make fun of me and claim that I'm trying to brag. But I went to see Everest in 3D at IMAX theater last summer, and just by chance, the rest of the theater was closed down because they were actually having the New York premiere of 99 Homes. So I got to see Michael Shannon there, who is extremely
tall.
Wait,
you told me you saw the premiere there.
No, I said I saw the premiere like occurring. I didn't see the movie.
Oh, yeah, you left that horrible detail out.
No, I didn't leave that horrible detail.
Saw the premiere occurring.
No, hold on. No, okay, Akiva, you don't listen to me at all because at the end of last
week's
podcast,
this was on GChat. This wasn't listening.
No.
Hold on, I'm gonna call up. You talk about it,
Akiva. At the end of last week's podcast, I said to you, tell me one movie to see that's not on my list, and you said, see 99 Homes, and I said, oh, is that like a documentary or something like that? And you said, no, it's not a documentary. Then I IM'd you a couple days later and said, oh, by the way, how would I even think that's a documentary? How stupid am I? I should have known that's a movie because I was actually at the theater where the premiere was happening.
Wait, here's the first conversation we had.
Yeah,
and
this is in reference
G-Chat
to the fact that
GChat is very like wonky. Like it's you don't appear to be replying to anything I said. But this is Alexander Chester. It's funny. I think I told you this, but I was at the premiere of 99 Homes.
Yes.
What am I supposed to say that you meant? You were there at the premiere?
Yeah.
I was at Game 7 of the World Series.
Akiva,
I was in the parking lot.
The context of that GChat, the previous line is, why did I say it's funny? Why is it funny? Because we just recorded a podcast in which I said to you, I've never heard of 99 Homes. I think it's a documentary. So the reason it's funny is because I should have known because I even saw what... Obviously,
you were at
the
premiere.
You
were at the premiere.
So you think I'm so stupid that I would actually have seen
a movie? No. I'm not saying you're stupid. I'm calling you a liar.
But the point is you're the stupid one. I am calling you stupid because I said on a podcast
at the premiere.
I've never heard of, hold on, Akiva. I said on a podcast, quote, I've never heard, and everybody should go listen to the last minute of last week's podcast again.
Two different chats.
Akiva, in the last minute of last week's podcast, I said to you, and I quote, I've never heard of 99 Homes. Is it a documentary? 5 minutes later, our podcast is over, and I remember, oh, I know what 99 Homes is, and so I IM you. It's funny, meaning it's funny that I just said to you on
the
podcast.
I saw the movie.
No. Obviously, I didn't see the movie. That's obvious, because I had just told you I never even heard of the movie. By the way, I really want to edit this whole thing out. No, keep it in.
Obviously, you have to give up.
All right, enough of this fight. Akiva, just tell me, what was the worst movie you saw this year?
Warning. Hot take approaching.
Without question, the worst movie I saw was Mad Max Fury Road. I don't know why it's people's number one movie of the year.
Ooh, hot. That's a scorching
hot take. Literally garbage. By the way, I think on Amir's list it was near the bottom too. But the worst movie I saw this year, without question. I have no idea why people like it. They should reevaluate. Like, it was just them driving around for a while. I can't even imagine what they liked about it. Like, I saw Ted. I saw Ted 2 this year. Ted 2 was better. Everest, which was awful.
It's funny that you said it's just them driving around. I saw Everest. It wasn't bad. But I saw it IMAX 3D.
The Joy with Jennifer Lawrence was better than Mad Max. And it was garbage.
Did you see Drive a couple years ago with Ryan Gosling?
No, it's not my type. Horrible Bosses, I was last
okay.
year. I'm
so
just looking at it one
so Drive is very...
The Interview was better. Yeah, keep going.
Drive is very similar to me, having seen neither of them, to Mad Max, in the sense that both were like... beloved by all the critics. People absolutely went nuts about both of them. People
were mixed on Drive. I think everyone likes Mad Max. Mad Max probably has the highest IMDb score of any movie this year.
Yeah, I mean, Mad Max people went nuts and people were, you know, now part of it, do you think part of it was motivated?
I didn't even know it was based on some story. I feel like the nerds have totally taken over and I don't know what we can do about it. Because anything they're into, I'm not into.
Yeah, I was going to say, what world do you live in where you're not one of the nerds?
Okay. Hold on. I'm not cool. But I'm not into. I've never seen Star Wars.
Well, but you can be a nerd.
And I don't watch.
I don't can be a nerd in many saying. Different I'm, ways. Well, there's different
well, maybe
ways
I'm
to be a nerd.
I'm a sports nerd, maybe. Well, but maybe. I've never seen.
Possibly. I wonder about that one.
Listen, we get better raps, the sports guys, than the Star Wars guys.
Yeah.
I think I don't watch comic book movies. I don't really watch a lot of action movies. But everything's being made for the nerds, and I don't know. The jocks like us.
Everything's being made for the Chinese market is what everything's being made for, really.
That's true. By the way, that's why, and I didn't, maybe it was like this in the book, but in The Martian, they have like this really, like, the Chinese are the heroes of the movie, which is great for them because they could just sell it in China and have a billion people.
You think that was why they put that whole piece in?
See, I thought, but then I realized it's based on the Andy Weir novel, so I could easily check and see.
That was another question my wife said to me. She's like, wait, why do they need the Chinese here again? And again, my answer was, I have no idea.
Right. And that's the type of thing. So maybe he put it in, but it's the type of thing they would have taken out because it would have cut 20 minutes out of the movie, except for the fact that you can't cut it out. So it used to be like Russia was the bad guys, then like China, but now I think China's back to being the good guys, and like North Korea or unnamed, you know, Middle East countries will end up being the bad guys in movies now.
Yeah,
whoever's worth no money to them is.
Did
the
you
bad
see
guy.
Straight Outta Compton yet or no?
No, it's on my list with Steve Jobs and
Look, my issue with Straight Outta Compton is that it's, you know, whenever I watch a movie that's based on a true story, what's important to me is how accurate it is. And it's hard to trust the objectivity of a biopic when it's produced by the subjects. And that's so Straight Outta Compton, obviously, it makes
it's like the
them
Jalen,
all
it's like the Fab Five movie, and Jalen Rhodes making the Five Fab movie. So it's so good. It can only be so good.
Exactly. And so they made, in that sense, the movie kind of annoys me because, you know, it makes them look so good. For example, and this was very controversial at the time, the fact that it totally slides over Dr. Dre having beaten the crap out of that female rapper and that rapper journalist. And basically anything bad that the guys did sort of gets glossed over. But the movie's very good. As I think I said on last week's podcast, the guy who played Eazy-E, I thought should have been nominated for supporting actor. He did a fantastic job. What about Trumbo? Did you see Trumbo?
No, I'm probably not even going to see it. It just, the ceiling is too low. I try and only see movies that I think might be great. The movies that just missed my top 10 were The Revenant and The Big Short, which are both very good. And I guess in another year would have made the top 10. But now that I say it, I do think this was a weaker year than I had initially let on. But yeah, I'm not sure. Me and Earl and Dying Girl, I thought would be awesome going in, wasn't. I saw a couple documentaries that I thought would be amazing and kind of weren't. Welcome to Leith, which is about like the biggest white supremacist in the United States, tries to buy up all the land of a small town in North Dakota. And they really just didn't have enough good footage. Like, it's a cool premise, but there wasn't enough meat in the movie. Movie Twinsters, which is like a short documentary about, not short, but like not much more than an hour, about two twins who were separated at birth. One, I think, is in South Korea, and one is in L.A., and they sort of meet on camera for the first time, and that's cool. But pretty good year for movies, but that's my
top 10. I would watch Trumbo if I were you. I really enjoyed it. So first of all, it's right up my alley because, again, my favorite things to read, frankly, is historical fiction. And so I really liked the movie. I just had a lot of issues with it. First of all, as I said before, it's my concern was how accurate is it? I try to do a lot of research to find out about Trumbo because, you know the basic storyline, right?
It's Walter White is back.
Yeah. Well, I mean, do you know who Trumbo is?
Like, yeah, he outed all the communists, or he was one of the outed communists.
Yeah, but he was also, I mean, he's one of the best screenwriters of all time, really. I mean, the number, he wrote Exodus, he wrote Spartacus, he wrote Roman Holiday, he wrote a zillion other really famous movies, and he was a very good screenwriter. But in the movie, as you know, as they're going to tend to do, they sort of whitewash it and they make him sort of purely good, whereas in reality, he was a communist, which he doesn't deny in the movie, but in the movie, being a communist is sort of treated rather benignly. And although historically we know that the House Un-American Activities Committee were the bad guys and McCarthy were bad guys, it is also true, you know, two things can be true. It is also true the communists were evil and that some of the communists in Hollywood were probably nefarious, whether intentionally or unintentionally so. Whereas in the movie, they're all purely good in every single way.
We all watch The Americans. We know all about this.
Yeah, but I'm saying, but so they sort of gloss over. So that, you know, and then, my issue with the movie is that, like I said about a lot of movies, is the characters are either purely good or purely evil. Helen Mirren plays a character in the movie who is insanely evil. I mean, she drops the word kike left and right every time she's talking about Jews. I mean, they make her as bad.
What does she do that's bad, though?
Yeah, so they make her as bad as can be. And again, the real life character she was based on, well, seemed to have been kind of a bitch, but I don't know if she was as bad as they make her out to be.
Okay.
But there was a lot of weird casting decisions in that movie. First of all, Louis C.K. is in the movie, and he kind of ruins the movie to me. I love Louis C.K.
What, does he start doing his act in the middle of the movie? Because that would be weird. No, he started doing that, like, his kids being on their iPhones in the middle
problem,
of the movie.
The problem is that Louis C.K. can't act. And, like, the whole time he's in a movie, you're wondering, like, what the hell is Louis C.K. doing in a good period piece? Was, you know, did you see American Hustle?
Yes, I did.
So he wasn't good in that, but he was much worse in this.
I didn't even remember that he was in American Hustle. Who
He gets punched in the face, remember?
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, which is good because he deserves it because he's, I mean, so he, but the problem is his character is like more significant here. And the dumbest part is that his character is not even a real person. So they insert this huge made up character. Maybe he serves as a composite. I don't know. But he didn't even exist in real life. It's played by Louis C.K. Really, really poorly done. Also, Edward G. Robinson, you know, like, you know, a famous old time Hollywood actor and a great actor. He was, you know, a very fat, old jolly guy. In this movie, he's played by Michael Stuhlbarg, who I love because he played Arnold Rothstein in Boardwalk. Actually, I love him in a lot of things. Michael Stuhlbarg is a great actor, but he's not nearly fat enough or old enough to be playing Edward G. Robinson. So I don't understand why he's there. But Dan Bacchadal, he's fantastic in this movie.
Right, just name five people no one's ever heard of.
Oh, first of all, Michael Stuhlbarg's a guy. If you Google him, you're like, oh yeah, that guy. He's a guy everybody, you know who he is, right?
No, I'm not good with faces.
Google him. You'll recognize him. Like, he's in a lot of stuff. And you know who Dan Bacchadal is.
I don't even want that in my Google history. That could be the worst thing in my Google history. Dan Bacchadal and Michael Stuhlbarg.
You definitely, okay. You know Dan Bacchadal. He was on, like, The Daily Show. He plays, like, a scumbag douchebag. Everybody in this movie had to gain 50 pounds to be in the movie. It seems like that was the role in this movie.
Is that the rule? It's like, it's like when Mac gained 50 pounds and It's Always Sunny.
Yeah, but there's so many. Oh, another ridiculous casting decision is the kids. There, he has, like, Trumbo his kids, and then he goes to jail for 11 months. And when he comes back, they have new actors playing his kids. His kids grew, like, 5 years, aged 5 years and 11 months, which is sort of like a reverse of, like, Game of Thrones, where the kids never age. But basically, if you're going to see this movie, you're going to see it because Cranston is unbelievable, but he always is, so... maybe that's a good segue to talk about the actual awards, because he's nominated for Best Actor. Oh, one more rant about the casting. The guy who plays Kirk Douglas in the movie, like, Kirk Douglas was like, did you ever see Spartacus?
I've almost heard of it.
Okay, well, you should see Spartacus, because you've seen Gladiator, obviously, I assume, right?
Sure.
And I assume you love Gladiator, right?
Yeah, it was fine. It was good.
All right, Spartacus is a really good movie, and Kirk. And also,
is that like the sequel to Gladiator?
It's a similar movie of a different era, but you know, I mean, it was made in 1960, so it has like the old time Hollywood feel. But Spartacus,
it's like a prequel to Hollywood, Gladiator, yeah. Basically.
But it's really good. But anyways, but the point is, Kirk Douglas is a huge, imposing, physically muscular guy, and he's played by this little shrimpy guy in Trumbo, who his face looks like him, but his body. It's sort of like when Matt Damon played that South African rugby guy in that South African rugby movie
that no one saw except you. Yeah, sure.
Yeah. So Trumbo had a lot of bad casting decisions. So whoever the casting director was, bad job by him.
That's a really specific take. Anyway, let's quickly do Oscar picks.
Okay. All right. So Best Picture. I'm looking at the list here.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if we're going to make a pick, I'll pick The Revenant, because I think that's what everybody's picking, because Leo gets raped by a bear.
Yeah. You didn't see The Revenant, did you?
No, I don't need to see a bear getting raped.
Okay. Oh, you think the bear gets raped?
That's why Leo's nominated, right? Because he feels like overcomes the bear.
And instead of killing it, he turns the tables on the bear.
Yeah. By the way, this is where I have to complain. So you made a joke a couple of months ago on the podcast where you mentioned
deny this, and no one's going to remember.
Some guy offered you a $100 bet that Trump would become president, and you said, I'm going to make the bet because Trump's not going to be president, and I'm going to win $100.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Let's talk politics. Yeah.
And you said, and if Trump did become president, then money would have no value. And so $100.
No value. No value.
So you made that joke on the podcast, and then I see you tweet out that joke this week. Well, what do you
see? I thought I had just made it to people like in person. I didn't realize I tweeted. It's not like I have so much material that I can't tweet a joke once.
I'm not like
Johnson High Five, who tweets the same five jokes all day.
You can't recycle your jokes. Once it's on the podcast, you can't go tweet it. The same way that like I made my stupid joke
What if no one listened to this podcast? I mean, people do. Yeah. Let's just say if no one listened to this podcast, am I allowed to do that?
No, that's
my, I'm not I, fine. I'm not going to give you my best material.
I made my bad joke about how The Revenant should be NC-17 for no cubs under 17, right? Because of all the bear sex in the movie. I'm not going to go and tweet that joke now,
because it would get no retweets and no faves.
Did your Trump tweet get any faves? It probably got a bunch of neo-Nazi Trump supporters mad at you, right? They really don't like it when Jews say anything critical about Donald Trump.
Luckily, I don't have the Twitter juice. Plus, I didn't at him, so I didn't get any.
Oh yeah,
I didn't get a single sort of bad one. But if I was bigger on Twitter and had added him, yes, I would have gotten a lot of.
Yeah, right now the worst thing to do on Twitter is to be a Jew who says anything critical of Donald Trump.
Yes, yeah, his most ardent supporters. A lot of them tend to be haters.
Maybe not in real life, but on Twitter, his supporters are all Nazis for some reason.
Yeah, I'm sure. Like, in real life, they're probably like awesome people, but they're Nazis. Yes.
No. but they're literal Twitter Nazis. Like, they're actually like white pride in their Twitter handles.
Yes. Oh yeah. Yes.
So I'm gonna.
Like, they will not even vote for a Republican if he doesn't win because they're like so enamored with him.
I don't think those are big voters usually. Honestly. All right. So what? Who? Are you
I mean, thinking? That's like a great. They probably all like want to avoid being like at a place on a certain time when people know they're coming.
Yeah. So what are you picking for Best Picture?
I will go with Spotlight.
All right.
Which I don't think actually has a chance, but I'm just.
Oh, it doesn't have a chance? Oh, okay. Because, yeah, I mean.
Maybe it's like third. I think Big Short is probably also ahead of it with The Revenant, which is the favorite. All right, let's go rapid fire. Best director.
All right. So director, I think these things tend to be. I'm going to like put all my money in one basket because I think isn't it tend to be like the same guy wins everything. So I'll go with.
It used to be, but now it's mixed up a lot. Inarritu from The Revenant.
Yeah, I'll go with Inarritu.
Do you not have a list because you just said what's his face? Then I assume you know to read.
Well, I had the list, but I don't know. I was looking at another computer. Let me go back to my list.
Oh, okay. Yeah, keep like your eyes on at least one computer. Adam McKay directed The Big Short, and it would be cool if the guy who directed Anchorman and was robbed for that won for The Big Short. But I'm going to agree and go with Inarritu. Best actor, Cranston, Damon, DiCaprio, Fassbender, and Redmayne.
So isn't this the one where DiCaprio is literally like 1 to 100? Like there's no chance. All right,
we both have DiCaprio. Yeah, he's for sure.
By the way, I don't like Eddie Redmayne. Not that I've seen him in anything, but I just don't like him. Just putting that out there.
I have no opinion on him. I think maybe I saw – what was he in last year? I think I saw that one.
He was in the movie where he plays
– The Math? Was there math in that movie?
Yeah. Like math movie? He plays Stephen Hawking. So, yeah, there was some math.
What was it called? The Theory of Everything? No, I didn't see that one. I saw the other one with the math. What was the other British movie with the war and the math last year?
That was the one where the codes – I forget.
Yeah, the codes. The secret code.
I forget.
Something like that.
Didn't see that either. I didn't see any movies last year.
Coders. I think it was called Coders.
I don't think so, but yeah. All right. Best actress?
IT guys. Hold on. I want to find the name of that movie.
See,
he's married to Hannah Bagshaw. That's a great name.
So British.
So wait. Here's I got to click on The Theory of Everything. See, like, then I'm on Wikipedia. Then click on, like, the Oscar from last year.
Oh, my God. You could have done this in one step.
I don't know one person who was in the movie. What am I going to Google? What's the name of the movie from the thing with last year?
Yeah,
The Imitation Game. Benedict Cumberbatch, Best Actress.
Okay, best actress. I'm going to go with Brie Larson.
Yeah, Brie Larson was pretty good. I mean, Kate Winslet was in like a movie that supposedly wasn't so good. Carol Blanchett. I didn't see Carol. Not interested. I don't know how to pronounce her first name, but Saoirse Ronan or how do you pronounce that first name?
I don't know. She's Irish.
Saoirse. I think it's Saoirse. Yeah,
no
Saoirse.
Idea.
Yeah, Saoirse Ronan. She was really good. I actually saw 45 Years. That wasn't in my top 10, but it would be in my top 15 probably. Okay, so yeah, I'm going to go with... and Lawrence was in a garbage movie that could have been great and was absolutely terrible.
But people like her are automatically get nominated every year now, which is stupid. She's like 25. Here's the thing. Like,
yeah,
she already has so many nominations and she's so young and they just automatically give it to her. So she's going to like blow Meryl Streep out of the water. She's going to end up with like 40 nominations in her career.
Well, if she, keeps up her looks and stuff, because I feel like Hollywood spits out any actress that doesn't really,
Good. I like that voice you're doing. The side of your mouth voice works well on podcasts.
Yeah. I think that, but she is great.
Wait, so
who
are you
picking? She was good in the movie. It's just terrible.
Who are you picking for best actor?
Brie Larson.
Fine. All right. Supporting actor, Sly Stallone, the only person nominated in a movie that had any black people in it this year.
Mark Rylance. I haven't seen Bridge of Spies.
So I'm looking at the list and I'm like, who the hell is Mark Rylance in Bridge of Spies? And I just Googled it. I'm like, oh yeah, he's that guy. And I'm actually going to pick him because I thought he did a really good job. And it'd be stupid if Sly Stallone won. Tom Hardy.
Well, Sly Stallone is the only, I mean, I don't know Mark Rylance, but like Hardy, Bale, and Ruffalo are like the three most unlikable people in Hollywood. That's an amazing Murderer's Row jerks.
But doesn't Hardy get nominated every year? I thought people love him.
I don't know how many times he has, but he's like notoriously like mean to the press and stuff.
Oh, well, Christian Bale is, but people still like him.
I'm saying. It's like three huge jerks. Although I don't know if Ruffalo has the jerk you know, I think we may be starting it, but in general, I don't know if he's like been known.
Yeah, Ruffalo's sort of the opposite. I think he's too earnest and annoying to me.
Sure.
So yeah, so I'm going to go with Rylance.
No, I'm going to go with Sly Stallone here.
I think he's considered the favorite, isn't he? So here's my question. Does the, you know, does Oscar So White, does that help or hurt Stallone? Because on the one hand, you could say that they're going to react and they're going to be like, oh yeah, it was, we did a bad job. Here's a movie that, you know, stars a black guy. We should try and give an award to somebody in the movie. Or is it, well, we can't give a movie to the white guy in the black movie because that's just like ridiculously like transparent.
Listen, you shouldn't see color as much as you apparently do. I don't know. Either way, the person who's best should win.
I'm not talking about me. I'm talking about the Oscar voters.
Yeah, I feel like you're projecting here. All right, let's go to Best Supporting Actress.
Okay. I really don't like Kate Winslet, by the way, so I hope she doesn't win.
Why don't you like her?
Oh, she's so annoying also. Also, okay. she made some comment about Jews and, like, I don't know.
View things through, like, one prism. The Chester prism. Rooney Mara, obviously, the Giants and the Steelers, two teams I hate. Those are her grandparents, so get out of here.
Wait, is this from The Martian? Or no, that's Kate Mara.
Yeah, whatever, but they're sisters, I think, and I don't do anything with the Giants or the Steelers or the Patriots or anything.
Why was Rachel McAdams nominated for Spotlight? She was like fine, but like nothing.
She's famous. I don't know.
Nothing.
I'm going to go. I think Jennifer Jason Leigh. I have no idea who the favorite is. Hopefully, it's not Kate Winslet because that Steve Jobs movie wasn't that good. I don't think. But
who's Alicia Vikander? I never heard of her.
I think she was the girl in the Swedish. Remember those Swedish books that were insanely popular and now nobody remembers anymore. And I don't even know if they finished doing those movies, even though there was like the number one book for 10 years.
Like the girl with the dragon tattoo?
Yeah. So I think she was, I could be wrong, but I think she was the original one in that. And then ironically, Rooney Mara took over for her maybe in the American ones, or maybe her sister Kate Mara, one of them. I don't know.
All right. So you're picking Jennifer Jason Leigh here?
Yeah, sure. Only woman in that movie.
Yeah. No, that's not true. When they do the flashback to earlier in the day.
Oh yeah, the flashback.
Then we see Minnie and we see the hot Australian girl who there's no explanation for what she's doing there.
Although that's right. She's not in that room.
Yeah. She's not there for long. And then there's the fat one who gets
You really have like you're like a database of who the ladies were in the movie. I don't know.
Well, I just saw a movie like 3 hours ago, remember?
Oh, I forgot.
Yeah, okay. She's the one, you know, she's like taking the M&Ms down.
How come you have to say like she's white, she's Australian, she's black? Like, can you just say people?
Because I don't know any of their names. How else am I supposed to describe
them? I don't know. Anyway, you said fat. Okay, best original screenplay. Bridges
Wait,
Spies,
I didn't pick an actress. Should I pick Lee also?
Well, yeah, you know, but now we're going super rapid fire because nobody cares.
All right, I'll pick Kate Winslet just because I hate her.
Okay, original screenplay.
Did you see Steve Jobs?
No, Ex Machina. Oh, okay. Inside Out, Spotlight, Straight Outta Compton. I'm going to go with Spotlight here for sure.
Wait, I'm looking at Best Adapted Screenplay. What's the category?
No, so go to Original. That's the other one with the screenplay word in it. You got the Coen brothers in Bridge of Spies.
Yeah.
You got a million people, you know, Inside Out, like the Pixar movies are really written by like 100 people.
Yeah, every year people are upset the Pixar movie doesn't get nominated for Best Picture. Instead, it's like sent out to the JV to the, you know.
Which is weird because people like loved Inside Out. My kids want to see it, so I'm waiting to see it with my kids. I feel like it would be weird.
So here's the thing. So I think Spotlight's the heavy favorite here, isn't it, from what I've heard? But
Probably because it's like the only one of these movies that's even in the top five or six.
But isn't this like the only movie that Straight Outta Compton was nominated for? This is the only award Straight Outta Compton was nominated for. So I think like, doesn't it have like an outside shot for like, again, as like Hollywood tries to make up for the fact that it's super racist? Or is it super racist? And all like the 85-year-old white voters are like, why would we vote for a hippity hop movie? That's probably what they would say.
I don't know. You're really bringing politics into this. I just like to talk movies there. On this podcast,
has anybody discussed anything about this year's Oscars other than like the racial issue? That's the only thing people are talking about.
All people want to talk about is Carol. That's all. Every conversation on the street is Carol.
All right, fine.
Tom McCarthy. I'll pick Spotlight. Tom McCarthy was one of the main actors in season 5 of The Wire, and he wrote and directed Spotlight. Adapted screenplay: Big Short, Brooklyn, Carol, Martian Room. So this is much bigger. This is like most of the Best Picture nominees. Adam McKay. I read The Big Short by Michael Lewis. Did you read that book?
Yeah, good book. It's the only book I read on this list.
Well, I read Emma Domeney's Room. Yeah. I didn't read Andy Weir's The Martian. I never heard of Price
Big
of Salt.
Big Short's got to win something, right?
Yeah, so let's give The Big Short this one. At least I will.
All right. It's a good thing that we're disagreeing so much.
Anomalisa, Boy in the World. This is Best Animated Film. Anomalisa, Boy in the World, Inside Out, Shaun the Sheep, When Marnie Was There.
It's obviously Inside Out, right? It's the only
Inside
one
Out. Next, Best Foreign Language Film, Son of Saul is a Holocaust movie, Embrace of the Serpent. Mustang is supposedly really good. I wanted to see it, but it's harder to find. You know, I get all the screeners from being in the Podcast Guild, but they don't necessarily send out the best foreign language films. I guess they figure podcasters are like boors who don't, you know, watch movies with subtitles.
Yeah.
Especially like if you're podcasting about like old sitcoms or reality television or whatever, it's, you know, you're not going to watch like a lot of subtitles. So it's, they don't send those out. Thebe, a Jordanian movie, A War, Denmark. That name probably is better in
Danish. Have you seen any of these? Have you heard of any of these?
No, but I'm going to go with I feel like the Holocaust movie usually does well, so I'll go with Son of Saul. But I think Mustang is the best movie.
Cinematography? Isn't that another good big category?
I don't know. We'll get up to that in a minute. Best documentary. I love documentaries. I'll watch a bunch a year. They never nominate any of the top 20 documentaries in the Oscars. I have no idea how they pick them. But Amy, Cartel Land, The Look of Silence, What Happened, Miss Simone, and Winter on Fire.
Amy was a very good movie, by the way. I'll say that.
Yeah, so. I've heard it's okay. Not enough for me to want to watch it. Anyway, yeah, I assume Amy will win. They're like star bleepers, and they'll be into
that. No, oh, we only have three categories that we disagreed on. So that's where our bet is. Our bet is going to come down to Best Picture, Best Supporting Actor, and Best Supporting Actress.
You don't want to do the rest? I thought you were such a big cinematography guy.
Just tell me the movies that are nominated. I'll pick one.
Okay, but we'll both say it at the same time. So if we disagree, okay?
Okay.
Carol, Hateful Eight, Mad Max, Revenant, and Sicario. Carol, Hateful Eight, Mad Max. All right, tell me when you're ready.
What is cinematography exactly?
It's like background noise. It's background picture.
Oh, like
okay, tell me when you're ready, and we'll count to three, and we'll say it.
Okay. One, two, three.
Revenant.
Damn.
Oh, my God, you're so slow. No, it wasn't a race. So now we got it. Now we got to
I figured you said it's background noises, and all I hate to say this, but the first thing in my head is like bear rape noises. Like,
I don't know. You really have not seen this film at all. But
was that a good bear?
No, it's not noise? Background noises. It's like background pictures. So the Revenant, like they shot in the snow, and
yeah,
I feel like that'll win. Best song. What's amazing is like you could the best song wouldn't be like
Let It Go.
Yeah, I think that was like last year's or a few years ago.
Yeah,
but it's never like one of the 1,000 best songs of the year.
Yeah, people were really mad that like nothing from Straight Outta Compton was nominated here even.
Oh, I didn't even realize that. Yeah, that is dumb. But it has to be an original song. Were there original songs in that movie?
Yeah,
isn't it mostly.
They
have like Lady Gaga in this and the James Bond theme, and it's just a stupid category.
Are you watching Vinyl? Changing the subject.
No, I'm not, and I hear it's not that great. What do you think about it?
Well, it's entertaining, but the thing about Vinyl is you absolutely have to read the recaps like immediately after you watch it, because I have no idea listening to any of the songs. Are these real songs and real bands, or do they invent them? I mean, other than like if it's obvious, like if they mention The Who or something. And like basically you need like hardcore like 70s rock nerds to like explain to you what the hell is going on in the show. I just thought of that because you talked about is it a song that's made up or is it a real song? Because watching Vinyl, I have no idea which songs are real and which songs are fake. All right. This podcast has gone off the rails.
We don't compliment yourself. It's good when a podcast goes off the rails. This is firmly on the rails. It just stuck in the mud or something. All right. Anything else? Next week we have a pretty big idea. The only problem is that you're coming to visit me for a week. So I don't know what we're going to do, like when we're going to record.
What's the big idea?
Well, I don't want to ruin it in case, you know, I don't want to get everyone's hopes up and then
all right,
not.
So tell me and I'll edit this out because you didn't tell me either. Wait, are you really not going to tell me? I don't get to know what we're doing on the podcast. I'll leave it. We got in a big fight about what were we fighting about?
I don't know, but you better leave
whether or not I saw 99 Homes.
I still get like people still like say like what can you ever put up that fight? They're very annoyed that Chester took out the 25-minute.
I know, and I've told every one of those people who asks. I say, tell me your email address, and I'll email you the file, and then they never respond.
By the way, can people leave us a review if they've gotten this far? I should have said this at the beginning.
Leave reviews on iTunes. That's true. We need more reviews.
We got some reviews at the beginning, but we really don't have any recently.
Yeah.
All right, so we have a couple big ideas.
Wait, what's
scorching hot takes?
What are we doing for next week? Wait, what's your plan for next week? Just tell me. I won't put it in the podcast.
Oh, but fine, we have to leave the rest of this in.
Okay.
I said we were going to do. Well, the Republicans don't really have a living president to be that proud of, to be honest.
Yeah, they're all in on Reagan.
Yeah, they're in on Reagan. I guess they like the first George Bush, but you can't really.
No. Republicans hate the first George Bush. First George Bush, Democrats like more now.
They
relative
like
to his son.
That's true. Do you think there's been like you could put this back in, and they'll just not know why you're talking about this. But like, whatever the opposite of a backlash is towards W now? Is he more popular again?
Yeah, well, whenever a president leaves, eventually becomes more popular. W, because he started painting.
It's like Jeb Bush. Jeb Bush quit, and everyone's like, oh, I kind of feel bad.
People remember W now as sort of like a little bit of a schlemiel. I'm like, oh, he paints. That's cute. And like people sort of forget like that he was actually a really bad president. Jimmy Carter I think hopefully everybody still remembers he was a bad president.
Carter, I feel like, gets less respect in a lot of ways, even then.
As a post-president, he's, you know, pissed off a lot of people, people like me anyways. But you don't like when I make too much about my demographic.
Well, your demographic is very specific. It's just you.
Juice?
Even your family. No, just you. Even your family is not interested in your demographic.
All right. So considering I'm getting on a plane in like 2 hours, we got to end this podcast so I can try and edit it and post it in the next couple hours.
Whatever.